Hello, and welcome to BNQ, Big Nerdy Questions, the podcast that's not afraid to give you the answer to every major question in nerddom, even though you know the answer is 42. I'm your host, Josh, and with me tonight are Matt.
Hello.
And Colleen.
Hola.
And tonight we're going to be discussing one of the most pressing questions in all of nerddom. Which fictional universe do you most want to live in? We'll be talking about the pros and the cons, and it seems like most of them have mostly cons. But before we can get started, we have to go to our sponsor. Matt, who's sponsoring tonight's show?
Well, Josh, tonight's episode is brought to you by George R.R. Martin. George R.R. Martin, for when you like your protagonists too much, and now they need to die.
Thank you very much for that, Matt. Ironically, Stephen Moffat also put in for that sponsorship, but we had to go with Martin. The red winning tops everything else. This is our first episode, so just a brief introduction. All of us here at BNQ love various things in the nerd world, from Star Trek to Star Wars, from Harry Potter to Game of Thrones, from Doctor Who to all the old school things as well. And we hope in this podcast that we will elucidate, illuminate, and otherwise educate on nerd issues and answer the questions that you've been pondering for quite a while. We want to start each podcast with a big nerdy recommendation, a work of nerddom that one of us has read or watched or played that we think you might want to check out. And for our first episode, my recommendation is The Baroque Cycle, a series of three novels by Neal Stephenson, who also wrote Cryptonomicon and Read Me. The Baroque Cycle is primarily historical fiction set in the late 17th century, early 18th century, follows three primary protagonists, a scientist named Daniel Waterhouse, a rescued slave and financier, Eliza, and a vagabond named Jack. As they interact with the highs and lows of European society, the events of the world, the developments of the economy, and a lot of other insane adventures. We like to think that Jack may have been the prototype for Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean. There's a lot of similarities. And trust me, it is nerdy enough because there is a character who has a little bit of magic and alchemy at his disposal. This is a great work of fiction. It's three books. They're all long, so you'll be in for a long haul, but you won't feel like you're in for a long haul. It is a great read. So with that this week, do any of you have some recommendations tonight?
I have one. It's an old book, but it's awesome. It's called Star Wars Shadows of the Empire by Steve Perry. Very easy read, but very interesting book. It takes place immediately after Empire Strikes Back and leads up right before Return of the Jedi. So it gives you the details of what happens in between as Luke and Lando, Chewie and Leia try to rescue Han from Boba Fett at the same time while Luke tries to come to grips with Vader's revelation of being his father. It is awesome. It's one of my favorite books.
Awesome. And we will link to the Amazon or Goodreads page for both of those in the show notes. So now I think it is time to get into our big nerdy question of the night. Which fictional universe do you most want to live in? I think we can each introduce different universes and talk about their pros and cons. And at the end of the episode, we will all name our choice. And I think the first one we should talk about tonight is the Star Wars universe. And Colleen, I think you may have a list prepared of some of the pros and cons of living in the Star Wars universe.
Oh, I have a list. I have several lists. I know. It was so sad. I was like, should I do this generally or should I break it up by time period? Yeah, I'm a dork when it comes to Star Wars. So
we all are. It's okay.
Well, we can start on the pros. Obviously, it's Star Wars. It's awesome. It's in space. They have Jedi. They have the Force. Lightsabers, hyperspace. And it's just fun as heck. On the downside, I'd say, well, obviously the Empire, they're kind of a bummer. If you're not a Jedi or a Sith, your life pretty much just sucks. You're just cannon fodder. It's perpetual war. If you think about the movies from the Clone Wars all the way through to, well, hell, even episode 7, just war, nothing but war for like 60 years. That's not fun. And yes, we're pretty sure that Jar 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 is still alive, and that's a major bummer.
Yeah, we'll have to kill him off later.
It's a major bummer that he exists to begin with, but...
We have a special guest. Allison has joined us.
Yes, I just signed on, so I wasn't sure if, like, I was in part of the conversation yet or not.
Well, you just have perfect timing because Colleen has just given us the pros and cons of living in the Star Wars universe, which I'm sure you have some thoughts on.
Of course she has.
Yeah, life sucks in the Star Wars universe if you aren't one of the Jedi, and even then it's going to suck because your life expectancy is, 3 or 4 days, depending on how the Emperor feels.
Your life expectancy is till you get into a lightsaber duel.
Pretty much, and then you die. Unless you're Anakin Skywalker, in which case you just get horribly burned and disfigured, but live on for plot point purposes in the episode 3 that we try to forget.
Wasn't quite dead.
No, not quite dead. Just a flesh wound.
I like episode 3.
And we have our first controversial opinion of the podcast. So, life is good if you're Allison in the Star Wars universe. I mean, honestly, I think a lot of the Star Wars universe might depend on which planet you're on. Because life on Coruscant would be a little more exciting than life on Tatooine. Life on Naboo might force you to take the Ernest Hemingway route out of life, if you know what I mean.
Well, I'm personally going to try to find at least one disturbing aspect of each universe that we discuss.
As we expect.
And starting with the Star Wars universe, I am going to have to say, why are all the books holographic? That's just freaky.
I know. There's no point to that at all.
But you can't pick it up. You can't read it. What's the point? I actually have the suspicion that illiteracy is rampant in the Star Wars universe. At what point do you ever see someone reading? I cannot think of a single instance of someone actually reading, other than, what, the scene in the Jedi library?
That's the only one.
In Revenge of the Sith, Anakin is looking at, like, a little, like, Game Boy thing that he's reading.
Oh, yeah. He is.
It's called a data pad, and they do have the language. It's called Aravesh, and that's the alphabet that they use in the Star Wars.
You know, the little-known fact is that Jabba the Hutt is actually the most voracious reader in the Star Wars universe. He models all of his people in the palace off of characters in Agatha Christie novels. And that was almost plausible enough to be true. That was this week's fact that isn't true but could have been.
Okay. Well, I think it's true but should have been.
And with George Lucas, you really never know.
Well, after he put the bust of himself in the Jedi library, you know, you never know with that guy.
Yeah, he was among one of the lost Jedi. There are 20 lost Jedi. Those are the Jedi that voluntarily left the Jedi Order.
Those Jedi are bad, then, so if you do good, then you have no recognition.
Well, you become one with the Force, or you become Yoda.
Yes.
That's a pro right there. You get to meet Yoda, which has to...
Not necessarily.
You get to meet him.
Yeah, okay. But backside of getting to meet Yoda, once you're one with the Force... You have to spend all of eternity listening to his sentence structure.
Yeah, that is a major con.
Go insane, you will.
Yeah, but still, lightsabers, hyperspace, the Force, that's awesome.
I can safely say, if I came into possession of a lightsaber, I would manage to accidentally kill myself within 10 minutes. I can say that with certainty.
Survival of the fittest, Matt.
You know, I gotta feel sorry for the rednecks in the Star Wars universe, because the minute they get a lightsaber, they'd be like, oh my, and they'd be dead.
The first thing they'd say is, hold my beer. It would also be the lightsaber.
Who are the rednecks in the Star Wars universe?
It's gotta be the moisture farmers, right?
I'm serious. I really want to know.
Are Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen rednecks?
Jakku's pretty bad.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm thinking more Jakku.
That is probably true.
Well, true. Any of them, I guess. I suppose if you're living on a moisture farm, then that might be, you know, about as redneck, I guess, if you can be.
Uncle Owen wasn't even part of the Republic. They were outside of Republic space. That's why slavery was still able to exist there.
Well,
I would love to hear a conversation with Luke bringing a girl home to Owen and Burr at some point. Oh, so what do you guys do? Oh, we're farmers. Oh, what do you farm? Water.
Well, I'd want to know, why is Uncle Owen so bitter? Is it because of his redneck life on Tatooine?
Maybe it's because he grows water for a living.
Hey, mom, the moisture evaporators, remember in Doom, he who, you know, I mean, of course, that's about spice, but still, they had a lot of water, and if they were able to control the water, they can destroy the spice, and then they control the universe. So don't knock it.
It is...
on a desert planet like Tatooine, having control of water equates power, just like it did in Dune.
My solution to this is to give someone on Tatooine a freighter that will easily go back and forth to Naboo and take all the water from the Gungans.
There must have been a lot of...
where apparently hurricanes all the time.
There must have been a lot of moisture farmers on Tatooine because, like, Uncle Owen always has to wait to hire new help for the new season, and they don't appear to have much money, so because that's why Luke can't join Biggs, you know, on the big adventures.
Think about how much money it must cost just to keep the equipment running on the farm if you have sandstorms, etc., you know, all the time. That's really going to run stuff down. I'm sure their equipment doesn't have a very long lifespan.
Yeah, I guess.
It's very difficult to have any, like, able young men to hire simply because they, at some point, would probably be required to, you know, join up with the Empire. That's what Luke wanted to do. He always wanted to go sign up with the Academy, the Imperial Academy, that, too.
So what I'm hearing is a pro and a con for life in the Star Wars universe. A con is a labor shortage, but a pro is if you are an able-bodied man and can somehow not serve in the military, you have ample job opportunities.
Well, I think the idea about joining the military would be an opportunity to get off of a backwater planet like Tatooine. That's why Luke wanted to join.
That's true.
And that's when he became the best starfighter in the galaxy in like half an hour. He goes from being no pilot to the best pilot in the Rebel Alliance.
It really says more about the quality of pilots that the Rebel Alliance already had than it does about Luke.
Well, they had Biggs.
Yeah, briefly they had Biggs. But he did join the Empire and he left.
That's true. Yes, he did.
And don't forget that Han Solo was once also part of the Empire. He got kicked out.
Because he confused his measurements for time and distance.
Yeah.
They frown on that in the Empire.
There's actually an argument about that statement, saying that it was an accurate statement, and that by stating it, he was, in fact, meaning to discuss distance, and that a route that only took as long as it did would require him to go dangerously close to black holes, such as the Maw Cluster, and showing that it's a show of bravado.
Well, I don't necessarily think it's a big deal of using distance to measure time or vice versa, because we do that all the time. Time to measure, you know, in terms of distance. We're like, oh, how far away is that? Oh, about 2 hours. That's pretty normal.
That's true.
Or if you're in the Pacific Northwest, oh, it's about 7 Starbucks away.
Dude, you have any idea how far away that would be? That'd be like my boat.
So as much as we like continuing on the Star Wars universe, we want to make sure we cover a few other universes in this episode. So our next universe, I turn it over to Matt because you are our resident Marvel expert. So Matt, what would life be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, everything would suck really bad. Life would suck and then you would die. The entire world is in a state of constant war. There's a massive surveillance state all over the world. You have superhumans both trying to be all neutral good and chaotic good, just, yes, this will be justice, and ignoring things like the rule of law and the Geneva Conventions, the Hague Conventions, and really anything relating to banning torture. Then you have superhumans on the other side who are like, yes, I'm going to destroy things. Because I can. Thanks, Thanos. Jerk.
Oh, yeah. And then aliens. Don't forget the aliens.
Yeah. And then there's the aliens.
And not good aliens either.
You know, I'm going to keep it to the Marvel Cinematic Universe because otherwise I'm going to start talking about women in refrigerator syndrome. And that's going to need to be a whole episode by itself.
Agreed. We're gonna do a whole episode on bad things with refrigerators, including Indiana Jones, but we'll keep it to the cinematic universe for now.
Well, yeah, civilian in the Marvel universe, you're dead. So,
yeah.
But it was not necessarily so bad if you had superpowers, because then at least you could fight back or do something or not die quite.
Well, yeah, it'd be okay if you're Asgardian, and you're not particularly prone to that whole being able to die thing.
Well, plus you also have an out with Mr., you know, Magic Hammer and his little rainbow road that he could just, like, you know, beam himself back up to Asgard if he's in any kind of trouble. I swear to God, it's like...
Yeah, but his brother's kind of a D-bag.
I was gonna say,
a sexy D-bag, but a D-bag.
It's like State Farm, you know, like... Like a good neighbor, Asgard is there, and then just see him out.
Yeah, unless you live in Jotunheim, in which case they'll be like, oh, that invasion was just childish actions, ignore it. He only killed like 100 of your people.
In Jotunheim, you have like the douchebags of all dads. Like, Odin is like the biggest jerk of all. I mean, like, he adopts and then pits the two brothers against each other. So, like, we're talking about major parent, like, mental abuse on Jotunheim.
Mm-hmm. But he does have a really cool horse.
So we finally found a pro. You have a good horse.
I wouldn't want him for my daddy.
Oh, God.
But it is Anthony Hopkins.
Odin needs a hug.
And that's our episode hashtag, Odin needs a hug.
Loki needs a hug, too.
You know, you get to hang out with Loki and with Thor, so, you know, there's that.
That's a major pro, Loki.
Okay, so for my utterly disturbing thing for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I am going to have to go with the surveillance state that the entire world appears to be part of due to the world security. So that's going to be my disturbing con for this particular universe.
Yeah, the surveillance state in the MCU is a bit... scary, and I suppose if you're okay with that, you have to put all your faith in Tony Stark, which is a scarier proposition. Exactly.
Yeah, tell me about it.
An alcoholic with an ego problem and historically drug issues. What could possibly go wrong?
I wouldn't want him watching my back. I would not want Tony Stark watching my back. I've never understood.
I mean, what if Jarvis gets a computer virus?
I thought he did.
Exactly.
Or Ultron, if you rather, but yeah.
My point exactly. Moving on to our third universe. Allison, what do you think would be the good or bad things about living in the Outlander universe?
Oh my gosh. Well, like, I think a lot of people think of Outlander as sci-fi. And it's really more, I mean, it has that time travel element to it. But I guess people also try to, you know, kind of throw it off as a romance as well. But, I mean, I think basically... your average Highlander life during, like, right in the 1740s, like, right before Culloden, would pretty much suck. So, the love affair and the hot Scottish body of, you know, your Outlander, you know, lover might not equal out to the war and the famine and everything else that's going on.
Yeah, but it's still a major pro.
Well, the thing about that is it's hard to reconcile because, you know, in the stories, in that world, she's living in two different worlds. So you have, like, the 1940s and the life that she has there versus the Highlander. And they travel to Paris and they do a lot of traveling. I think that it's just,
you know... Did they travel to Paris in the 1940s?
No, in the
1740s.
No. Like, because the whole premise of the second book is that they're trying to stop the Battle of Culloden from happening because they think that Jamie's gonna, you know, she thinks that Jamie may be killed in Culloden because she can never find any information about whether or not who survived and who didn't. And so the whole time they're trying to stop the battle, so they go to Paris where Bonnie Prince Charlie is and they try to sabotage every single thing that's happening, all the events that are going into motion to try to stop it, and they can't do it. So the battle's going to happen anyway. They spend so much time trying to change the future, and they kind of lose sight of their relationship. I think it really becomes more of a burden than, you know, this all, you know, encompassing love that's supposed to span the centuries.
Well, Allison, I don't know as much about Outlander. Is the time travel in Outlander voluntary? Like, could that be a pro that you get to choose to go between different times at your own leisure?
Like, it's not very clear in the book. The time travel aspect of it might be cool. It might be something that would be a pro, except that it's not predictable. You can, it happens, you have to be at a certain spot in Scotland where these stones are, and it's like the time portal is through these stones. And she can go through the stones, then she can go back if she wants, but then sometimes she can't, and sometimes she can. It's like an awful plot device to move the story however way it wants to go.
Wait, time travel being used as a plot device? I've never heard of that.
But it's a bad one. It's a bad one because, it just kind of, it's back and forth and back and forth, and the politics is interesting, the politics between, Scottish Rebellion and then World War II, which is the other time period that she's living in, is right after post-World War II. So it's also interesting because, she actually has post-traumatic syndrome from World War II, which she's also experiencing in the Outlander era because she's going through the Battle of Culloden.
Yeah, I would think going through that battle would, seriously traumatize me. I come back with some serious PTSD.
Right. So, I don't know that there's really... The way that time period is portrayed in Scotland, I suppose there's no fantasy really involved in it. I guess it depends on whether or not you think you'd be happy living in Scotland in 1750s, or would you prefer to be in the 1940s and 50s, So.
Yeah, in the 1740s, anywhere, life would be short, brutal, suck. Unless
exactly.
Nobility.
I personally prefer to live in time periods with indoor plumbing. Maybe that's just me.
Well, there's your disturbing thing of this universe, no indoor plumbing.
Yeah, very.
It gives a whole new definition to to the name Outlander.
Well, they were going to call it Outhouser, but they were worried about pronunciation issues.
The first nerd universe that I ever loved, Star Trek. Yeah, you knew it was coming. So... The pros, you have warp drive to go pretty much anywhere in the quadrants that you want. You have a replicator, so there's never a shortage of food or any material that you need as long as the replicator can produce it. You have a transporter that is 99% of the time safe travel, about the same percentage as planes, and not as easily tampered. You have the holodeck, which is virtual reality on steroids. Just don't go in there after Commander Riker, because Lord knows what he did in there. The Federation has made peace, at least on Earth. You're very rarely going to get into conflicts if you stay in the Federation. There's no money. People work for the betterment of themselves and society. Of course, this is all idealism. It's never probably going to happen, but we're going within the constraints of the universe. And within the universe, it's pretty darn good. Then the cons, however, there's the obvious ones. There's the obvious one, Khan, yeah. Well, that's the obvious, is that there's a lot of antagonists in the Star Trek universe. The Khan, the Augments, the Cardassians, the Klingons, the Borg, and not all of these people, all of these species are uniformly bad, but they've all at some point tried to kill humans and or take over Earth and or assimilate Earth or change Earth's past, and it gets dangerous. Beyond the obvious one, there's also... In the world where there is no strife and no money, it's not as simple to become successful, is motivation an issue? And I don't really know the answer to that, because there's never really a definition in Star Trek of why people do the things that they do aside from pure altruism. And I'm not optimistic enough about humanity to think that that would be true. So what motivations would people actually have, or would we get a society where everyone just lives at home, uses their replicator, uses their holodeck, because that's all they need to do, and never leaves? There's that.
Maybe with the Star Trek timeline, sometime in Earth's history, everything went to hell, and we nearly lost everything, so people in the future, after that, were like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be such jerks to each other.
Actually, that is what happened. In the Star Trek timeline, around 2050... World War III occurs, and about, I think, someone's going to correct me on this in the feedback, but I think about 60% of Earth's population was taken out with nuclear war, and in the ashes of that, which is portrayed in the film First Contact, that's when you get the invention of warp drive. And that's what brings the combination of the PTSD from World War III and the discovery of intelligent life with the Vulcans landing on Earth is what unifies the race and basically stops intra-human conflict.
So thank you, Vulcans.
Pretty much. They're the Deus Ex Machina that saves humanity, according to Star Trek lore.
Oh my god, does that make Spock god?
He already was.
Savior now?
Fascinating.
Spock is my savior.
And that's another hashtag for this week's episode. Spock is our savior.
What would Spock do?
I feel like that one's already out there somewhere.
Josh, what would Spock do?
Spock would think through everything logically, find some things fascinating, but every 7 years he'd have to mate or die. So that's unfortunate. But see, I personally am of the feeling that even given those cons, life in the Trek universe is a little less dangerous than life in the Star Wars universe.
Wouldn't it be more of given those cons?
Well played, sir.
I have to say this, at least in the Star Wars universe, Earth doesn't exist. It's completely out of the equation. And all the other universes, for whatever crazy reason, everybody seems very interested in Earth as a planet. God only knows why. But Star Wars, and this is a big thing to worry about, but the biggest thing really you have to, is, well, it's destroyed now, the Death Star and then the Star Killer base. It's always such a great idea. Mm-hmm.
Don't forget about Death Star 2, Electric Boogaloo. For my disturbing thing, in the Star Trek universe, the sheer number of STIs of non-human origin brought to humans by one James Tiberius Kirk, I believe his name is, the sheer number of STDs and STIs that that man probably introduced to humans is likely staggering.
Obviously, he took their mission's purpose quite very seriously.
He did discover strange new worlds. Indeed. And on...
I think he took some creative license with that one. That's what I think he did.
You know, you might say that he had a very dangerous enterprise.
Oh, my.
Oh, goodness. I think actually things could be pretty good in the Star Trek world.
I think it could be. You know, if you can avoid the Borg invasion, you're probably pretty good to go.
The only thing is, like, Q is a real... he's a real dick, and, like, the holodeck would be fun, but, you know, those are just some perks.
Your red shirt, you're gonna die.
Yeah, never wear red.
True.
Never.
It is only your color if you're about to die.
Bring me my red shirt, for I'm about to die.
Yeah, so, not good. That's another thing, too. I think that would be a major con. Your destiny is somewhat determined by the primary color you happen to be wearing.
That's true. And you will confuse everyone on Earth if you wear purple.
Do you feel like that the members of the Starfleet, though, that there was a lot of trust? There were some trust issues there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you're in the original series and Kirk and Spock ask you, the guy who's not on the bridge crew and they're wearing the red shirt, to come with you to a planet, you better make sure your last will and testament's in order, because you're screwed.
I imagine it'd be very difficult to be gone for such a long period of time on those ships. You know what I mean? Like, you know, sometimes when you're visiting family and they're your family, you could spend a couple days with them, and by the end of the week you want to kill them. Can you imagine having to go on, like, extended missions where I'd be gone for years and just see nothing but the same people over and over again?
I mean, it's got to be like life on a submarine, but much, much worse because it's so much longer.
Exactly. Oh, my God.
I can safely say from personal experience that being involuntarily with the same group of people for several years at a time, far, far away from home, you love and hate those people simultaneously and with equal vigor by the end of it.
Assuming you enroll in Starfleet, although we don't know much about what civilians do, it seems like every civilian we meet in Star Trek is a scientist. But, you know, there is a little bit of good for those of us here who are all, we're all four of us have a history background to some extent. In one of the episodes, there is an official Federation historian. So there is a role for historians.
I could definitely be a triple team, like a triple breeder.
Oh, a triple breeder might be the most difficult job in the Trek universe. Although, no, sorry, the difficult part is stopping them from breeding.
I think that might actually be a major pro in the Star Wars universe, is that if you're just a regular civilian, as long as you don't get on the Empire's bad side and get caught in the crosshairs of the Rebellion, etc., you can probably live a very, you know, relatively normal life. I mean, think about it. Owen and Beru, they were fine until they got on the Empire's bad side.
Yeah, their nephew kind of screwed the pooch on that one.
And then they were toast.
Well done.
The stormtroopers came over. They're like, "Hey, we want to invite you to this barbecue," and they're like, "Sure, we love barbecue." And then it's all, "Hey, that's not what we thought you meant."
Yeah, the Empire's a maker con. And like, it's true. The Empire.
It's true though that if you were kind of on the outer rim and minding your own business, for all the luxuries and things like that and conveniences of Coruscant, I mean, you're pretty safe.
I'd say that for the average person, I think even with the upheavals, with the fall of the Republic, the rise of the Empire, the collapse of the Empire, and then whatever the hell the First Order happened to be, that I think for the most part you would be pretty okay. You know, those things tend to just pass a lot of people by. Just as long as you're not a Jedi, or, you know, as long as you don't choose a side, as long as you remain neutral for the most part, you should be okay.
So Switzerland is fine. Don't choose a side.
Twilight.
Well, Twilight Universe, Allison, please elucidate us. How would life be in the Twilight Universe?
I was just saying that because, like, in Twilight, Bella's always saying she's Switzerland because she won't take a side with the werewolves or the vampires.
And it worked out so well for her, didn't it?
Fangs a lot, Edward.
I would be so tired of Edward so fast that, I mean, seriously, who wants to be in a world where people watch you sleep?
I'm sorry, that's just stalker right there.
Yeah, that's like the police or breath you take.
My list of disturbing things about the Twilight Universe really is longer than my list of both pros and cons combined. Everything about that. First of all, emo vampires.
That sparkle.
They sparkle like diamonds.
But by the very definition of classical folklore, first of all, the Cullens are not actually vampires, according to traditional folklore. They sparkle in the sun, and they live in the woods, and they try to stay away from humans. There's already a word for fairies.
They don't try to stay away from humans.
English, Northern European. Well, Western European, classical fairy tale fairies. Just really tall.
Well, the thing about the Cullens is once they, like, let you in, they won't let you go. I mean, they're, like, trying all the time to be like, "Oh, it's for your own good. I just love you so much, and you're my best friend." And all the Cullens are like, "We love you like a daughter." But
they acted like that, and they weren't all super attractive. The book would have ended with, "And Bella filed for a restraining order," and it was great.
So Forks is the new Waco.
The rehashing of Jonestown is what it would have done.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. That's just even more disturbing. And also disturbing, you have to take geometry for every year for the next 100 years, apparently.
Who chooses to do that?
I mean, we'll see. I mean, like, and who becomes a doctor? A vampire doctor, really? Because you like to punish yourself by being around people that can bleed all over you because you want to atone for what you are.
It sounds like a character that someone created for D&D when they wanted to make a challenge for themselves.
Or they just wanted to torture their DM.
But it's not. It's a real thing.
That would get you kicked out of one of my campaigns. If I see that character come up, my campaigns are gone.
So what we're saying is sparkly vampires suck, and not just literally.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. And it's an unrealistic... I mean, obviously, it's unrealistic, but...
I can cut your brakes and put your life in danger because I love you. No, you're crazy.
Well, no, it's because it's like... Vampires is to be, like, what you want to aspire to be because you think they're beautiful. And, you know, no thought about what your life is going to be like taking geometry for 200 years over and over and over again.
Twilight is a poorly written, Mary Sue, self-insertion piece of drivel that only became popular because it fueled the sexual fantasies of people with similar pseudo-fetishes to Stephanie Meyer.
Being serious for a minute, in the Twilight universe... The pros of being the vampire, you know, vampires have power. You know, that is part of their, you know, the powers are different, but that is part of their folklore. They are attractive to people because of their powers. And, you know, if you were a vampire in the Twilight universe, you would be, you know, strong and you would be fast and you could kill beasts with your teeth. And anyway, so like, you could graduate over and over and over again from high school. But I mean, like, the overarching message, like, I mean, that would be like your pro is, and also is that you are part of a community that you feel like you belong with because you're an outcast in your own world. So it's a sense of family to them as well. So I mean, that is something that, you know, a queer twisted family, but.
They were in Washington, weren't they? What town was it?
Forks.
Forks, Washington. Okay, I might make a pilgrimage there. I think it's only 2 hours away from where I am.
They actually have a tour that you can take of Forks, Washington.
Oh my god, Alex, we need to go dressed up like Buffy. We can be the vampire hunter.
I mean, I'm much more of the werewolf Team Jacob persuasion. So, okay, so what are the pros and cons of being a werewolf?
I'm sorry, I'm Team Winchester.
A pro for being a werewolf is I'd have rock hard abs.
If anybody's seen Teen Wolf, there's a lot of good about being a werewolf.
Yeah.
Yeah, but okay, here's a bad thing about being a werewolf, though. You're allergic to shirts. I'm looking at you, Jacob.
This is true.
I'm looking at you sternly, disapprovingly.
Okay, well, it depends on what universe you're talking about. I mean, because there are werewolves in the Harry Potter universe, too, and that's different.
But which is a good segue, because I was about to ask if we could talk about something that was actually decent literature, Harry Potter. Colleen, what are the pros and cons of being at Hogwarts?
Okay, well, pro, you're a wizard. Done. Well, and magic. But the biggest con is that most of that magic tries to kill you in horrible ways. I mean, think about it, even their sport, Quidditch. They are going to take these small children and we're going to throw you up into the air hundreds of feet where you zip around these rooms and if you fall off, let's just go, we'll fix it with magic, you know? Oh, and then there's a forbidden forest you can't go into because it, you know, if there are lots of creatures in there that will kill you. And then there's a giant squid that lives in the lake and merpeople that will kill you. There's a three-headed dog that lives upstairs and it will kill you. I mean, how many professors got into, you know, Hogwarts who were trying to kill Harry and other students? By the way, there's also a giant snake that lives in the basement that wants to kill everybody.
But it's also on the upside, basement. Finals always get canceled.
Because
of the guys. I mean, that's another good point. All the magic is fatal. It's like that other, like, the publication that she's put out. What's it called? Like, Beautiful Creatures or...
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find
Them. Yeah, that's it. I mean, like, they're all... It is. It's all magic that it's not really beneficial to you in any way except to for survival against the other magic.
I mean, and what do they even really teach the kids? I mean, and then what do you do with all this magic after you graduate? I mean, from what I understand, I mean, I get that Harry and his year got, like, really horrible education, but I don't really know what they've learned by the end of it other than, like, your basic first year spells. Yay, Protego, and, you know.
Sure.
What do you
I can levitate the small object. Woo.
I don't understand. It's like, compared to the amount of danger that's out there they potentially face in the wizarding world and what they're taught, there's like this huge gap between it. It's crazy. But, you know, hey, magic, floating pumpkins and talking paintings and ghosts, it's fun.
You know, it's interesting because... It's so popular even today with so many people, and especially, you know, younger people, because of the magic. But you guys rightly point out, almost all the magic is deadly aside from just, like, oh, floating pumpkins. So I think people tend to ignore the side that everything can kill you.
On that note, I would like to bring up my disturbing thing about the Harry Potter universe. I actually have two that I have major issue with. In the Harry Potter universe, the first in relation to magic, with the magic shops that they show in, I believe it's Diagon Alley, where it's, oh, all the little jokes and gags and stuff, they have an actual effective love potion, which functions pretty similar to the actual real-world effects of GHB. And that concerns me, considering it's commercially and publicly available and completely unregulated.
Okay, first of all, it's Britain. It's magical Britain. You know, and we've already seen how effective, like, their Ministry of, like, the Misuse of Magical Artifacts Department is. So I'm assuming that regulation of these things is not on the top of their list. I mean, there's Nocturne Alley, and there's all kinds of, like, back, you know, backhanded deals going on with, you know, dark artifacts there. You
effective analog to actual national governments.
Well, we already know that. How many times did the Ministry collapse in the course of those books? Who knows? Maybe things would have been better in Voldemort if he actually had a plan beyond kill Harry Potter and destroy Hogwarts. Focus, it was his place. If he had, you know, just destroyed the Ministry and focused on, like, building his power from that and isolating Harry that way, then who cares if Harry lives or dies? And quite frankly,
I think of Voldemort as the Richard Nixon of literature. Because he let a personal obsession and paranoia.
Of course, exactly.
He let a personal obsession and paranoia take over his plans. And like Colleen said, he could have easily, you know, just taken down the Ministry and gotten the power, but no, he has to kill the boy who lived.
He spent 7 years trying to kill him and failed.
Yeah. He should have hired our sponsor, George R.R. Martin. Harry would have died like that.
Oh, don't even get me started on, like, how Harry died and then he came back, because that's still irritating to me.
Okay, my other disturbing thing with the Harry Potter universe is, from what I've seen of the Harry Potter universe, due process seems to be optional, which concerns me greatly.
Yes, that's been brought up many times about how it keeps up. Weren't even granted trials. They were just thrown into Azkaban. But then again, in that context, you could argue that perhaps the Ministry had what the equivalent of wartime, you know, powers. And but they were just coming out of a war when everybody was being killed by Voldemort, this horrible dark wizard, and just dark times with the rebellion. But in any case, I agree. Even after that, like when Harry is threatened to be just because a house elf used some magic, I mean, talk about overreaction. So yeah, their law seems to be very antiquated. It is one way to put it.
I mean, they may as well rename Defense Against the Dark Arts Intro to Constitutional Law, because they're just as effective.
Again, I think we're back to the point that their government is very ineffective.
Now, and I have to also say that broom maintenance is probably easier than getting your car tuned up.
Not so much wand maintenance, though, but yeah.
No.
One word. Splinters.
Oh.
Well, then just do it naked and learn how to fly. And you don't have to worry about brooms. Well, then that's why a lot of people apparate anyway. They don't like to travel with brooms.
Does it have to be a broom, or could they enchant other objects? Like, could you fly standing on a scooter?
How about a vacuum cleaner or a mop?
I like it. I want to see them try to fly in one of the things the janitor uses in the hallways to wax the floors.
I still think they need to mass market the Weasley's car.
I think what people really enjoy about the Harry Potter universe is, like you said, it's the magic, it's the possibilities. They're infinite, and people enjoy that.
Yeah, and I think we can have another podcast later about Harry Potter's legacy, but I also, you know, all three of the main characters you can easily relate to. All three of the main characters are very well developed. And to segue, into another series where every character is well developed, Matt, since we've been mentioning George R. R. Martin, what are the pros and cons of living in Westeros?
Well, the pros are Peter Dinklage. And Peter Dinklage.
He might be the only one.
There are a lot more cons than pros for Game of Thrones. I'll tell you that much right now. So the pros with Game of Thrones are, if you are a highborn and haven't particularly angered anyone, especially ones named Lannister lately, you live pretty well until your family pisses someone off and you die horribly. Or if you just die horribly anyway. So the cons to Game of Thrones. You're going to die
horribly. Your pros were you might not die horribly.
No, my pros were you have a chance, if highborn, of living well until you die horribly.
That's such an awful pro.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like if you were kind of like life under Nero in ancient Rome.
Okay, how many people in Game of Thrones have actually died of old age?
One.
Yes, one. Maester Aemon. That's it. Nobody else in that entire universe has died of old age. Everyone else has died violently.
So your odds are not good.
Here's a few major cons for Game of Thrones. Name a single historian in that entire series, book or television.
None.
All of history is left to the maesters. But what else is left to the maesters? Oh, yeah, they're also the doctors and the midwives and the OBGYNs and the mystics and the meteorologists. It's like these guys just have really way too much on their plate.
Well, actually, that makes sense that they would have all those other responsibilities because early record keepers, I mean, even in our own, like, reality, our own history, doctors and midwives and astronomers, those people were our early record keepers because they were the ones present to observe, like, those significant events.
And because they were some of the only ones who were literate.
Exactly. They had that additional responsibility.
Yeah, that's something I really have to give George R. R. Martin a ton of credit for, is he did quite a bit of research to base a lot of what goes on in the Song of Ice and Fire series on the actual dark ages of the real world. A lot of the tactics and methods used for things of non-magical nature are based in actual history.
That's dark age tactics from them.
See, what I feel like somehow if I was in the Game of Thrones universe, in order to survive, I would join the group that I'm blanking on the name that Arya's in, that you can change your face. I would learn that skill and then change my face to whoever is in favor right now.
I would join the group that's looking for a way out of that world.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I would just die horribly as a small child because of my eyesight. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but there is no mention or visualization of eyeglasses anywhere in that series.
No.
They all have the survival of the fittest.
They all have such pretty eyes.
I probably would have wandered off a cliff by the age of 4.
You have horrible parents.
Yeah. And they would have just been like, I guess we'll just have to make another one. It's not like birth control exists.
You know, I just thought of one other pro, though, for the Game of Thrones universe. Someone will die before you because Sean Bean's in it.
Yeah.
Ooh. Don't you think that like, being able to control dragons would be a pro?
Oh, that is true. You could control the dragons.
You could be their dragon whisperer.
The Dragon Whisperer coming to theaters this fall.
I would say no to the dragons just because of the things that there's only one person we see with actual legitimate control over dragons being Daenerys. And the relationship she had with those dragons, especially shortly after they were hatched, honestly grosses me clean the hell out enough that I would forego the dragons just to avoid the weirdness.
Yeah, but dude, dragons.
Yeah, but I'm not about to breastfeed something where all of its teeth are canine teeth.
Okay, Matt, you're a guy. I don't think you'd have to worry about that.
I'm just saying, you did it. It was creepy as hell. Not in the show, but in the books.
So let's go to a place that's a little bit less dark than Westeros. Why don't we talk about the pros and cons of living in Mario's Mushroom Kingdom?
Oh my god, you're high all the time.
You pretty much are. Yeah. I was thinking about this earlier, especially if the Mario Kart rules applied. Here's the good thing. You can drive off a cliff all Thelma and Louise style, and you will be picked up by the guy in the cloud and not die. You can drive on a highway.
Also means you can't kill yourself to get away from the police.
That's true. You can drive on a highway made of rainbows, you know, way up in the sky, and live to tell about it.
Yeah, and 4, too.
That's true.
Okay, disturbing thing with the Mushroom Kingdom, 2 words, sentient fungi.
Yeah, Toad is a bit creepy when you think about it.
Well, wait, if we're talking about, like, what if you're living in the version where it's like the 2-bit world, that would be
so weird.
Like the 8-bit world, you know what I mean? It's like, okay.
You'd have to get everywhere by jumping into pipes, but if you jump in the wrong pipe, you're screwed.
What is the third dimension of which you speak?
Although you have warp zones, that's helpful.
Yeah, but you're going through the sewers. That's dirty and it smells.
It really is. And here's another good point for this one. As a major con, if anything touches your body, unless it's your feet touching an object, you die.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Well, Mario punches things and he gets stars and coins. What does he do with those coins?
Where does he put the coins?
What does he do with them? He's gathering coins for what? Is there like a store or something that he buys them?
In the RPG, like, you can't actually buy equipment with coins, yeah.
I know, it's ransom money. He's collecting the ransom money so he can pay Bowser to free the princess.
Maybe Princess Peach is a gold digger. And she ain't messing with no broke Luigi.
No, I like the version where it said that the princess was, like, you know, trying to negotiate a ceasefire peace treaty with Bowser, and then Mario kidnapped her and starts war.
My favorite theory, and especially for the original games, is that Peach staged the kidnapping to elope with Koopa, and Mario is actually her jealous ex-boyfriend, and Toad is just running interference so they can get away. That's why he's always like, oh, she's in another castle. Nah, she's climbing out the back window, man. I'm in the back window, getting in his convertible, and gunning it.
Well, that would explain why Koopa is so easy to beat in the first game, because all you gotta do is run over and hit the switch on the bridge. He's not really a fighter, he's a lover, but he has to put up a big show.
Yeah.
He's just a king trying to do his best for his people.
Exactly.
Unlike Odin, who needs a hug.
So what we're saying is Bowser's better than Odin. Odin needs a hug.
Odin does not need a hug.
Hashtag Odin needs a hug.
Oh, goodness.
So why don't we wrap it up here at the end of the episode. So we're going to go around. We've talked about a couple universes, and obviously there are a lot more out there. We will revisit this topic at a later date with maybe Narnia, for example, the Stargate universe, things like that. But for now, of the ones we have mentioned tonight, Allison, which universe is your new residence?
The Star Wars.
The Star Wars universe. Colleen.
Of course.
I'm on a Star Wars binge right now. I'm going to have to stick with Star Wars.
Matt, where are you going?
You know, confession, I am much more of a Star Wars fan than a Star Trek fan. And out of all these universes, my favorite to read and enjoy in multimedia is definitely the Marvel Universe, be it MCU or Earth 616. But for my personal residence, I have to go with the Star Trek universe, specifically in the Next Generation era.
You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say the same thing, not just because I like it the best of all of them, but I think it's the safest and it has the most possibilities for life. There are a lot of cons, though, however. So half of us said Star Wars, half of us said Star Trek. But let us know.
The eternal battle continues.
It continues. But let us know.
Exactly.
Let us know what you think. You can get in touch with us on email. We have two email addresses, bignerdyquestion@gmail.com, as well as bnqfeedback@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts. We may read them on a later episode. You can also tweet us at bnqpodcast. You'll see our lovely Velociraptor logo on there. Let us know what you think. And we leave you with one final thought. In every episode, after we've wrapped up the question, we need a palate cleanser before we go. We have to kill off Jar Jar Binks. Matt, tonight, how will we kill off Jar Jar Binks?
Well, Josh, tonight, Jar Jar Binks will die by taking a Death Star to the Naboo.
Jar Jar's dead. We're not. We'll see you next time. BNQ out.